May it please the Court, my name is Tony Jobe. I represent the plaintiff, Violetta Escobar-Klein, and we're here to decide the most important issue that has to be decided, I believe, is simply whether or not the federal preemption statute in effect at the time of this accident, in effect today, is 44112. And the problem with it was that all the competent evidence that we have, whether it's the lease or the operating agreement or the amended lease, all gave the owner of Nevada Leasing the right to do whatever he needed to do with this helicopter at any time. And what's really unusual...
Wait, where does it say that?
Where does it say that? The operating agreement at 4.7 between the lessee and the lessor specifies the power granted to the majority owner, Mr. Chevalier, in paragraph B, that he has the right to manage and operate any company property or asset, and he had the exclusive power to perform all of necessary functions from day-to-day operations of the company of leasing and the business of assets. And what's really interesting...
But it's a leasing company, so what he has a right to do is to do everything with regard to leasing, right?
Well, this is very unusual because we essentially have a mom-and-pop shop, not a big bank or financial institution, which is why that's one big legal reason why Nevada Leasing does not qualify immunity under for liability under 49 U.S.C. Section 44112. The case law is clear that you have to be a financial have the financial asset under your control. And he passed on the day that he got the helicopter. And first, you have to remember, he bought the helicopter through Nevada Leasing.
Who's he?
Mr. Chevalier, David Chevalier. He's the 89.5% owner.
But you say you're not piercing the corporate veil.
No, no. That's not our case at all.
Okay, so what's your...
somebody could maybe make that argument. We never made that argument. Okay, so we're really here only on the issue of how you interpret, you know, the statute, and it's very simple. It's not being interpreted, at least for...
It has to be actual control or possession, right?
Correct. And when you read the briefs the defendants have filed, they put words ahead of that phrase and after that phrase, and those words don't exist in the statute.
But it has to be actual control or possession of the helicopter at the time of the crash, right?
No. That's where...
Not of the helicopter?
No.
Actual control or possession of what?
Of the ownership rights to make the decisions to take the helicopter back off the lease, you know, and say you no longer can operate it. Because the statute used to say under 1404 back in the 50s that you did have to have actual control at the time of the accident. Congress amended the statute in the 90s, and we now have 44112. And 44112 doesn't say that. They took it specifically out because they wanted it to be broad enough for the leasing company to operate its assets the way they wanted to. And so the defendant has taken the position in their briefs, and it's really pretty simple, to exercise actual control or possession at the time of the crash. The statute doesn't say that at all. They put words back in from the 50s that don't apply anymore. So I think it's this very singular, simple issue of a misinterpretation of the actual words of the statute. And the statute in the case law now says that we've cited that financial lessors like big banks and leasing companies, which this 44112 were designed for, are the only ones that are qualified for immunity under the federal statute. They were trying to encourage the growth of airlines after World War II and subsequently. But they clearly, the case law, the controls that we've cited, just either makes the mistake of thinking it's like you said, Your Honor, that they have to do exercise something or they have to be at the time of the crash. In this case, Mr. Chevalier and his company were at the same Maui airport.
Well, what does actual possession or control mean then?
It just means that it's a noun, not a verb. There's no
What's
real
a noun, not a verb.
Possession or control are used as nouns. Only way you could turn them into a verb is to say that they had to do something at a certain time to prevent it. Actual is a legal term in the way that Congress uses it. Do you have the documents? We do have the documents, these agreements, the lease, the operating agreement, the amended lease, all these documents.
Even if they lease I understand that these people are all interrelated, but let's leave that aside for now.
Yeah, but they operated this correctly. They did everything right. It's just the negligence was he made the decision to keep flying a defective helicopter that he testified.
Who's he?
Mr. Chevalier. In the deposition of Mr. Chevalier, he admitted that he had the right to cancel under either capacity, but he also admitted in the deposition, and we cited it in our brief, that he admits to the fact that he knew this helicopter had failures in the tail, almost brand new, in Europe. And before this crash occurred, the Federal Aviation Administration issued a mandatory airworthiness directive, which warned of this danger, the tail, and required that that all these fixes had to be made to it. But the fixes didn't seem to be preventing the fact that the tail falls off. The tail was found 900 feet from their main wreckage. But more importantly, we later found out in the discovery with Airbus that one of the rotor blades delaminated. And when one rotor blade delaminates, it causes the other blades to go out of track. When it goes out of track, it puts a lot of stress on the tail rotor. The tail rotor is underdesigned already. That's the problem our experts testified to and in the Airbus case. And basically, it applies here. He admitted he knew about these ADs. He knew about the problems in Europe, and he still kept flying. But he's the one that can take it out of service. But, of course, he could have acted either way because he owned both companies. But he kept all the formalities of corporation.
You're not relying on an alter ego theory, so what does it matter that he owned both companies?
It doesn't. It's just that he never made the decision to remove the helicopter from the flight line and do something about it, either give it back to the manufacturer or make them fix it. You know, just like on automobiles, you know, some of these automobile recalls are very dangerous and have to be met. So he just never made that choice. The leasing companies are responsible if they don't for liability under state law, which we have right here in Hawaii, if the federal law doesn't apply. Well, the way they rewrote the federal law and took out all this business about exercise at some time or at the time of the crash, all that's gone. All that's left is actual, which I think is an adjective. An adjective. And then the next word, possession, which means like ownership documents. Is it really your? Who owns this at the end of the day? Right now, in this case specifically, that we want to get back to take to trial, Nevada Leasing was the ultimate controller of their ownership interest in the helicopter and could have the authority to take it back from Blue Hawaiian so they wouldn't keep flying it. It was obvious Mr. Chevalier wasn't going to make that decision.
So are you arguing that this is a question of fact to go to the jury?
Yes, it really is. All these facts need to go back to the jury, yeah, which we got deprived of. So, I mean, really, it's a summary dismissal. So it's all these facts are material facts that are in dispute, and the jury never got a chance to decide them. And I'm sure the jury here in Hawaii, with a lot of helicopter accidents over the last decades written up by the NTSB and everybody else, would be interested in doing the safe thing. And the safe thing didn't happen. So whether this statute was read correctly is very important, at least at the summary judgment level. So it doesn't mean that you have to go fly it. You just have to say you can't fly it anymore. So I asked Mr. Chevalier in his deposition.
So, but did the let me just get my little diagram here again. So at the time of the accident, did Nevada Leasing have the power to say this aircraft should not be flown?
It had the power to do it before, during, and after. All the time it had the power to say no.
Would that come under possession or control?
Both. They own it, and they control the right under the leasing documents, which is, again, contract, like I've been hearing about this morning in these other cases. The provisions are very clear. For example, the operating agreement at 4.7 of the agreement between the lessor and the lessee, that's Nevada Leasing and Blue Hawaiian, specifies the power granted to Mr. Chevalier as majority owner and manager of Nevada Leasing. At paragraph B, it provides Mr. Chevalier has the power.
Where are we now? For what?
It's operating agreement at provision 4.7. It's in our briefs, and it's in the documents of record.
Counsel, what's your basis for making a distinction between physical possession and legal possession? The legal possession, do you see the legal possession as being different than physical possession for purposes of the statute?
Two concepts.
Correct.
You know, it's different.
Is legal possession, in your view, sufficient to meet the statute as opposed to physical possession of the aircraft?
I think what the statute says is, does the leasing company have actual possession, which is a legal term?
But what lets us know that it's the legal idea of possession as opposed to the physical idea of possession? What lets us know that?
You know what helps you figure that out is go on with the statute or control.
Right. I get the or control, but I don't get your argument regarding possession being legal possession as opposed to physical possession. Because to me, physical possession is more related to control.
But
in terms of being able to dictate when the plane flies or doesn't fly.
The statute and the cases we've cited don't deal with possession with the leasing companies under anything other than they have the contractual rights to possess it, take it back in, do repair it. And all these provisions, I could read them to
what
you.
What case can I read that will assure me that the term possession in the statute refers to legal possession as opposed to physical possession?
You know, I don't think you're gonna see them maybe not use the exact language you just used, but the result is what I'm saying, that if they had the legal right to take the plane back or the helicopter back, then it's up to them to make an intelligent decision about safety, not leave a defective product.
So you're arguing as a matter of logic rather than any cases that have said that?
No, there's cases that say it. First of all, you got to remember we're on summary judgment. And
We look at cases on summary judgment.
Yeah.
We look at cases on summary judgment.
Oh, I know you do. And conflicting testimony is sine qua non in a case of a case inappropriate for resolution on summary judgment. That's Direct Text versus Electric Arts at 836.
That wasn't the question I had. So I guess the answer is there is no case that tells us whether possession means legal possession or physical possession.
This would be essentially a landmark case, but it would apply to these specific facts only. You know, I mean, we're not dealing with a big bank or leasing company.
Can I ask you a question? The ultimate backdrop problem here is that if this were all one company, then you couldn't bring this case because it would be a workers' comp problem.
Well, we don't have that. The workman's comp case was settled way before this case.
Well, fine, but you couldn't sue Nevada Leasing separately if it were the same company as Blue Hawaiian.
If I wanted to, yeah, but that's not what we chose to do. And
you couldn't do that. You could not do that, right?
Legally, we have the right to bring an action. That's what these cases stand for on federal conflict preemption on this statute and that for leasing companies.
Okay.
That.
All right, but so then you're saying that the proof of the possession and control is powers of managers 4.7 of the operating company, but it doesn't say anything about who gets control or possess an already leased helicopter if the leasing agreement doesn't give it the authority to do it.
It does. The lease gives it authority because the lease between...
So it's the lease that matters, not this document.
No, the lease, all these documents matter. They all have to be read together, mm-hmm. you see? And so they've done this thing exactly right if they want to do this. The only thing is they should have taken the helicopter back. But here's what happens. The lease gives the right for Nevada Leasing to lease to Blue Hawaiian this helicopter, okay? And then the operating agreement, who grants rights to the owner and the managers, which is Mr. Chevalier himself, in both cases.
Do what? Huh? Manage the business.
He's the president and CEO.
Okay, but what does the operating document give him the right to do with regard to leased
to
aircraft if they're leased aircraft are under control of somebody else?
The operating agreement prohibits it being under the control of anybody.
How?
But the company they're leasing it to, Blue Hawaiian, and the company that owns it, Nevada Leasing. That's the beginning and the end of that. So it's unambiguous language that after Nevada Leasing went one step further and gave it security interest, because the FAA requires you to file a document if you own it, that you own this helicopter, it's an actual operating certificate, it's granted to you, and they granted the security interest, which the money came from the First Bank of Hawaii. The Nevada Leasing didn't have any money in this other than, you know, what Blue Hawaiian was doing was standing like a mortgagee who's got collateral to get a loan. And the collateral was the cash flow of Blue Hawaiian.
Counsel, you're well over your time. Let's hear from the other side.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. Thank you very much. May it please the Court, my name is Patrick Kearns. I represent Nevada Leasing. I would like to address a couple of things that Mr. Jobe said, and I think that I can answer for the Court rather quickly and perhaps bring this back around to what is really at issue in the case. Judge Rawlinson, to answer your question, there is no case that says both you and Judge Berzon asked a similar question, but there is no case that says legal possession, for whatever that means, or legal control, for whatever that means, is what's at issue in the statute. In fact, if there was, that would be remarkable, because it would be completely contrary to the entire body of law, as limited as that is, completely contrary to the entire body of law which underpins this statute. There was a question from the bench that said, how are we supposed to know? What can I look to find out whether we're supposed to be looking at legal versus actual possession? And I'll tell you, I think the answer is relatively straightforward. We look to the plain language of the statute and the legislative history. When you look at the legislative history of Section 44112, it tells you that it's designed to provide absolute immunity for lessors of aircraft for the purposes of allowing more people, and I'm going to summarize here, more people to get into the aviation business. Aircraft are very expensive, liability is very high, nobody wanted to purchase these things because their liability would exceed their investment. So Congress stepped in and said, we will provide immunity to those who are willing to do it and lease it out. That tells you something about what they meant about actual physical possession. And Judge Gilmour, in her opinion here, granting summary judgment, she did a very, very good job of going through what she called and what many other courts have called plainly unambiguous language, which is a lessor of an aircraft to another party is not liable for injuries or death unless they have physical, actual control.
Well, it doesn't say physical, it says actual.
I'm sorry, actual control or possession.
I mean, what is odd about the language here is that there's sort of a temporal gap in that it doesn't say that the time of the possession or control or the connection between the possession. It doesn't say there has to be any connection between the actual possession or control and the personal injury or death. It doesn't say that the possession or control has to be at the time of the personal injury or death. It's sort of weird in that way.
I think it's weird, Your Honor, only if you're looking for the ambiguity that Mr. Jobe is looking for.
Forget Mr. Jobe. I mean, it's not there, is it?
No, of course not. You're absolutely right. There is certainly no statement in the statute that says at the time. However, let's presume that it isn't at the time. Let's presume that it's at any time. So the opposite of being at the time of the accident. Then what you have is a statute that's meaningless. Now imagine
what the statute is talking about, and you start out down this line, is that actual possession or control is a factual question, right? Or at least mixed question of law and fact. What does possession mean? What does control mean?
I'm not sure if it is, Your Honor. This is a great example of this case. There is no dispute about the facts in this case. Everybody agrees on what the A, B, and C building blocks of the case are. The two sides disagree what that means. They disagree what control means. There's no question, for example, I'll explain. There's no dispute in this case that the two entities are separate legal entities. One is a separate legal entity in Nevada. One is a helicopter operation company.
Is there any dispute that Nevada Leasing could have instructed Blue Hawaiian not to fly the helicopter because it had some problems with the tail wing?
Dispute would be the wrong way to put it. There's no question. I agree with Mr. Jobe that Mr. Chevalier testified in deposition that he believed he had the ability to cancel a flight under I don't have the exact language, but I believe he said
if he could cancel a flight, isn't that control?
A certain level of control, I would agree, yes.
Well, what he actually said was that as the chief executive officer of Blue Hawaiian or as the owner of manager in Hawaii, in either of those roles, did he have the authority? And he said yes. Well, in one of those roles, he clearly did have the authority.
Sure.
Right?
Yes.
He didn't say in both of those roles. He said in either of the roles.
I agree.
He didn't say that.
Well, it's actually ambiguous whether he meant either of them meant both or either of them meant each one.
I think that's absolutely true.
That leads to the notion that if that's dispositive, there should be a trial.
I don't think so, Your Honor. There's other steps. This is one little issue because what that requires.
But why isn't that the key question? The key question is, did he have the authority to cancel the flight? Why not?
I don't believe that is the key question. I think we have to keep in mind here that the statute talks about lessors. The statute talks about someone or a company that leases these helicopters long-term.
Right, but you can be a lessor and still retain actual possession or control over the plane at any given moment in time. So just saying that's a lessor isn't the end of the inquiry.
I don't think it is. What I think is that being a lessor at all in any situation, or at least any that I can think of as I stand here, necessarily presumes some level of control. Otherwise, it wouldn't be a lease.
This is complicated by the fact that the individuals involved all occupy various controlling type roles in both of the companies.
It is, Your Honor, but I think that it gets uncomplicated if we look back at what we're actually trying to apply here. The basic elements of Section 44112 don't ask about those details. It doesn't require them in order for that to apply.
It is a factual question. Otherwise, you'd be saying it's a legal question, and you started out by saying it's not.
I think if we disputed, for example, whether Mr. Chevalier had some type of ability to have an impact or have an interest or cancel a flight or something, if we disputed that, that would be a true factual issue that a jury would have to decide.
You don't dispute that Mr. Chevalier could control whether the plane. I mean, I don't know if you want to go there because then maybe some judgment should have been granted the other way.
Yeah, and that's not what I'm saying, Your Honor.
Yeah, I know. that's not what you're saying for your position.
No, that's not what I'm saying at all. What I'm saying is that in any lease situation, there's going to be an owner somewhere that has some level of control, and the plaintiff's argument here is based on the idea that any bit of control, any small bit of control anywhere in the scheme.
The authority to cancel the flight that caused the accident isn't a small amount of control. Is there any authority in – he said that, or let's assume – I mean, I think he was ambiguous whether he said that, but assume he said that. Is there – A, is that just positive, and why not?
No, there's – listen, we're talking about one statement during deposition testimony that, frankly, I think is being taken out of context. Let's keep in mind that Nevada Leasing is not a helicopter operation. Blue Hawaiian helicopters.
Well, you think he's wrong. In other words, he didn't have the authority.
I think it would be complicated for a company that doesn't operate helicopters to get into the helicopter business. This is a Part 135 operation.
The problem here is that it's Mr. Chevalier putting on hats. Here's a hat, here's a hat.
And a layperson answering a loaded question at a deposition. That's, you know, and that creates the ambiguity.
That happens every day.
Every day.
So that's not
Is there anything in the documents that would support the conclusion that he had the authority to cancel the flight? Or anything that suggests he didn't have the authority to cancel the flight?
That he did not have the authority. I'm sorry.
Your position is that even if he said that, he actually didn't have the authority to cancel the flight. Is that
my position is that Nevada Leasing as a – Mr. Chevalier is not being sued. Nevada Leasing is being sued. My position is that in that circumstance, they have some ownership retention. That's specified in the lease. But they have taken, as Mr. Jobe said, they actually followed all the little rules. They complied with all the details. They've taken every step to identify the parameters here. The same lease, by the way, the same lease agreement that upon which plaintiffs rely for this particular claim,
well,
also specifically
– they rely on the operating agreement. I don't – as far as I know, they're not relying on the lease agreement.
Well, I'm sorry then. I'm referring to they rely on the lease agreement in their briefs – in the lease agreement in their briefs for the co-management portions and the – well, at least that aspect of their argument. But that same agreement, all these same agreements, there's no dispute here that Nevada Leasing owns the helicopters. There's no dispute that they lease them to Blue Hawaiian. It's in that same agreement, it says specifically that Blue Hawaiian shall maintain sole possession, custody, and control. They shall operate it. They shall comply with the FAA. They shall comply with all airworthiness directives and service bulletins and all the – they do all the maintenance on the helicopter. So if we're talking about legal possession or legal control, yes.
The question is what really was happening.
I'm sorry?
Notwithstanding what was in the lease, the question is what was actually happening.
Your Honor, I couldn't agree more.
Actual.
I couldn't agree more. This is the In re Lawrence versus Inlow case. It was cited both in our brief but also by Judge Gilmore. This is one of the more applicable, more analogous cases from a construction standpoint. It was from the Southern District of Indiana. In any event, that court was one of the few courts to look at this and identify this exact problem. When Congress makes a relatively clear statement and says lessors who don't have control over helicopters that they lease out shouldn't be liable for their injuries, and then someone comes along and says, well, what's control? In the In re Lawrence case, the court said liability is prevented on lessors, and I'm not quoting there, but here's the quotable part. They said, the imposition of liability is prevented on lessors that are not engaged in some concrete fashion in the operation of the aircraft. Now, doesn't that make sense? Doesn't that fit in exactly with the rubric of what Congress was trying to do?
Well, as I understand the evidence here, there was some evidence that with his Nevada Leasing hat on, Mr. Chevalier knew about some problems with his helicopter. Is that right?
I disagree with that characterization, Your Honor. There was some evidence that Blue Hawaiian, as they are required to do, both as a Part 135 operator and as the lessee, that they had received notifications that operators will occasionally receive, airworthiness directives from the FAA and things of that nature.
But not Nevada Leasing?
Nevada Leasing does not. That's absolutely correct. They do not. They could not. They're not an operator.
Let me ask you a question.
Yes.
FAR Part 135 document, Exhibit 4, that talks about operational control. Was that a document that was submitted by Nevada Leasing to the FAA?
Which document?
The document that talks about operational control for purposes of complying with the federal aviation regulations.
The document that I was just referencing?
I'm reading from Chevalier's testimony,
where
he was talking about having listed himself as the person who was responsible for operational control in a document filed with the FAA.
Okay, that would have been Blue Hawaiian. Blue Hawaiian has the certificate for 14 CFR 135. They're the certificate holder in order to fly helicopter operations on a commercial basis. Nevada Leasing is not. Nevada Leasing is a leasing company.
I have to look at that document, but because he's asked, he's asked if there's some safety issue that came to your attention that you are aware of. You certainly had the operational control to make the final decision. He says yes, and that wouldn't make any difference whether you were the CEO or you were just given that authority by the FAA. You would just make it, right?
I would agree with that. I would agree with that statement.
Okay.
I think Mr. Chevalier, as a sensible guy trying to do the safety thing, he has the ability. He owns or operates Blue Hawaiian.
I would think he would want to have
that. Yes, of course.
Of course. Even
of course.
But no matter which hat he was wearing, he would want to make sure his helicopter was safe.
And I'm sure that that was the basis for his answer. I'm sure of it.
All right. Thank you, counsel. I'll give you 1 minute for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honors. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Aviation law, which I've been doing for a long time, can be confusing for judges, too, as well as individual people and people who operate airlines. The FAA document is a license that you have to get from the FAA to be the operator in a 135 carrying passengers for hire like Blue Hawaiian did to fly. But that doesn't have anything to do really with what we're here about, because it's really what's in the lease, the amended lease. These are all separate documents. The lease itself, we cite it and give you exact references to it.
What is in the lease that supports your position?
What's in the lease?
That's
what we were talking
about.
The
amended lease.
I'm sorry, what?
You were talking about the operating agreement earlier.
Yeah.
What about the lease or the amended lease?
I talked about the operating agreement first. The lease at provision, there was two leases, okay?
Right.
There's an initial lease, which they just call essentially a lease, and then there was an amended lease and...
Presumably it's the amended lease that's relevant, no?
No, they're all relevant because they did different things. And that's why you have to look at it. I'm trying to kind of lead you through this.
The amended lease, it doesn't overtake the original lease?
No, because here's what's complicated about all this. There are various provisions from a leasing company and or the operating company of things that go on, like maintenance.
Right, but tell me what section of one of the leases is
yeah.
that supports you.
The controlling conditions of the lease at provision 11 assert Nevada Leasing's authority to control modifications to the helicopter, authority to control the number of hours flown, and reserve the authority to monitor the operation of the lease.
The lease
they're to be read together.
This
you know, these
the lease, excuse me.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
The lease or the amended lease?
Well, you asked me about the lease.
I want to know which one are you talking about now.
I'm talking about the lease.
The lease, okay.
Okay.
Even though it's been superseded, all right.
And so basically...
Was the lease superseded?
Well, you have an amended lease.
No, it didn't supersede.
But he wants us to look at the lease, which is not the lease.
Sometimes it's amended. An amended lease will supersede, and sometimes it won't.
Well, that's right, but it doesn't...
So what does it do here?
it's just another variation of things that were happening. For example... Nevada Leasing gave its security interest that it had as the owner, the actual physical owner from the FAA. They owned it. But Nevada Leasing had a Part 135 certificate. And so anyway, they gave their security interest to the Bank of Hawaii. So, but these documents, the lease gives provisions for Nevada Leasing to come in and do all the things I was just reading about. The amended lease gives them other provisions. It's all in the brief. And then, they have to be read together. There's nothing exclusive.
Okay, tell me where in Section 11 of the lease, which is what you started from.
Okay, sure.
There is a provision that gives the lessor actual possession or control.
Okay, at provision 11.
I'm in provision 11.
Okay, Nevada Leasing.
A, B, C, D, or E, which one?
Can I just say this little lead-in? Assert its authority to control modifications to the helicopter. Assert its authority to control the number of hours flown. Reserve the right
Where? I don't see those
provision
things. I see that it says you can... All right. Well, read it to me. Where is
that? It's that provision 17. Nevada Leasing maintains the right to inspect, perform maintenance, conduct repairs, And the plain language of the contractual lease places Nevada Leasing in actual control of the helicopter during the terms of the lease. So that's where that is.
All right, but you're not reading from the lease. Okay.
So the thing that would be helpful is if you would say the paragraph or the page or the subsection.
Or the words.
Or the words. So why don't you, we're going to submit this case, and you may submit a letter, a supplemental letter brief, both of you, explaining what provisions of the lease you think and the amended lease support
really
your position.
Yeah, it's in our brief, but it
right. But maybe just put it in a letter.
Excellent idea.
Focus it.
It is complicated.
Okay, but we don't need to talk anymore today about this. Yeah, we will get a supplemental brief in 7 days from today on this point.
Okay, I've got to get home probably out of New Orleans. Could I have a little longer?
2 weeks from today. Okay. All right?
Thank you very much.
We got to get home, too.
Okay. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, for those lays. I'll see you later.
Yeah, thank you. I am grateful for the lays. They are beautiful. I didn't realize I would have this reaction to the lays. Okay. Escobar versus Nevada Helicopter Leasing.